Hey pop fans, is this thing on? You're listening to Right Back At You, the 2000s pop music podcast where we have fun taking pop music seriously. Hosted by, he turns the dance floor into his own little nasty world, David Lim, and me. I'm not a twink, not yet a bear-ish. Joel Babington. Hello, David. How are you doing?
I'm good, JB. I think the word you're looking for is cub.
I'll just stay in between and I'll wait for the bear.
While I'm in between. Oh my gosh. Wouldn't that be a fun musical? I'm not a twink, not yet a bear.
I'm just me.
You don't know what it's like to be me.
How are you doing, Davo?
I'm good, JB. I feel like, look, you know what it's like here living in London. The minute the sun comes out and it starts to feel a little bit like spring, I think people are just in a better mood, aren't they?
Oh, God, yeah. It absolutely changes it. I mean, look, you can go out on your lunch break and you get a little bit of sunshine. It's not completely dark when you leave work. Like, absolutely brilliant.
It just feels like we're headed towards spring and I've been anticipating this better weather.
He's been anticipating. It felt like spring sprung in that first weekend of spring. I went for a big long walk on the Saturday, big long walk on the Sunday, because here in the UK, you never know when you'll necessarily see the sun again. So if you can, you got to go outside when you can.
Yeah, go get your sunshine, girl. I know you want to. Yeah, we're full of the pop references today. You can tell we haven't done this kind of episode in a while, have we? We did a lovely Ian Masterson interview last time, which was great.
Yeah. Yeah. But we are back in 2001 now, and probably, arguably, the most sort of prolific pop star moment of our lifetime.
Yeah, like pop star underline moment of the 2000s. And I know I said anticipating before, so I can't use that joke again, but I really, truly have been anticipating doing this Britney era.
I mean, look, we sent each other the breakdown of everything going on in this time. And I'm sure there's even more than we'll touch on today, but bloody hell. Like, we both feel really busy in our lives at the moment. Looking at how much Britney had going on in 2001, 2002, put things into perspective.
Yeah.
Of the girl was booked and busy. She was everywhere with multiple releases across film, music, television, commercials, so much stuff. But the positive side of that is I feel like this album and pop music moment, it feels like it intensifies everything. It's got the pop to intensity, but also the edginess to intensity that we'll see carried on in the Zone, Blackout and onwards. But this feels like the real crossover where the Venn diagram, if you've ever been a Britney fan, this would be the most intense period for it.
I see this always as a real coming of age moment for Britney. She was growing up. She was, 19 going on 20 at the start of this album era, which to me is shocking, because I thought she was surely 21, 22 by this point, because she had done so much already. So in revisiting the press narrative and all the stuff that was being brought up in interviews, I'm like, you can kind of get why America was quote unquote up in arms about her.
Shook us.
Yeah, why they were shook with the image change. But also for her, she's kind of like, I'm just behaving like a regular 19, 20 year old. It's you guys that aren't letting me, aren't letting me express myself. It's really interesting to be going back to this golden age of Britney and, you know, that imperial phase, like you said, where it's crossing many different platforms of film, TV and other projects. We're doing something that we've not done in this way before, where we're taking one album era and we're actually going to do it in two parts.
There's just so much, guys. So much.
So, JB, what's the lay of the land with part one here today?
So, look, we're going to keep it true to Right Back At You. We're still going to go in a chronological order, take you through the history. History books are open. School is in session, guys. We're going to talk about some stuff which is actually arguably the tail end of the Oops era. But I said to David, we have to talk about it. We will then obviously talk about I'm a Slave for You. Ending part one on the album and the album highlights. And then because there is still such a raft of incredible work in this album campaign and rollout. Part two will be the remaining singles of the Britney album. And then look, because there's so much, we're not going to really do Dream Within a Dream Tour today or Crossroads, but who knows what the future holds for those two.
Just letting you guys know this in case you're, you know, wondering why certain things aren't checked off in this particular episode. There's going to be a part two coming very soon after, and we're looking forward to getting into it with you guys.
Absolutely. But before we even get into it, Davo, can you read us a lovely review?
Yes. Listen, guys, thank you once again for the lovely comments on Spotify, for leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, if that's your thing. It's definitely not lost on us that there are thousands, millions of podcasts out there and you choose to listen and take your time to show us love. So thank you so much. I'm going to read you two, actually. This one is by Chris, who's left a comment on Spotify under our last episode, which was the interview with pop producer Ian Masterson, where we talked about his work with Danny Minogue, Jerry Halliwell, Sophie Ellis-Bextor, Bananarama, all that lovely stuff. He said, "Legend, you are doing the Lord's work. Amazing interview. Thank you." Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Chris. We'll take
thank
it.
Thank yous.
Thank yous, sis.
And the next one is by Flemish Giant. "Great talk. Ian is royalty for those of us that grew up reading small print in CD booklets. Agreed that the SEB's reading of Yes Sir, I Can Boogie is superior to the original, as magnificent as Baccarat already is." Thank you for acknowledging that. And then it goes, "Geraldine Estelle's third album was called Just Passion, though. Maybe it was the impact of the Passions of Girls Aloud that made correct. You repeatedly refer to it in the plural."
I tell you what, right? Well, firstly, thank you, Flemish Giant. Spot on there. When you sent me the edit back, David, the first thing I clocked was the first time I said Passions. And I'm like, Joel, you idiot. You fucking idiot. What have you done? But
you know what? I didn't even think about it because Geraldine Estelle is such a passionate woman.
She has so many passions.
Why would it be singular?
And it is.
She has many passions.
An eclectic album in a wonderful way. Like, you know, as you pointed out, all the different fades of music that are in there. So I think we can unofficially call it Passions, but you are right to clock us that it is Passion. But yeah, I felt seen, and I agree with you. I was equally part ashamed of myself, but also proud that you straight away thought maybe it was Passions of Girls Aloud that made you say the wrong thing, and you're absolutely correct.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Brilliant. Thank you, guys. If you're loving what we're doing, please do leave us a lovely 5-star review. Hit that subscribe button. Tell a pop-loving friend. And don't forget to follow us at Right Back Pod on all social platforms. All right, Davo, let's strap into the time machine. Let's go back to 2001.
Yes, so we are here with our girl, Britney Jean Spears. Now, after the history-making success of her first two albums, Baby One More Time and Oops, I Did It Again, our girl Brit is on a roll. That Oops album sold over 20 million copies worldwide, proving that she's no one-hit wonder. Britney's definitely here to stay. And she spent basically 6 months on tour doing 88 shows off the Oops, I Did It Again tour, which was her biggest tour yet. She took that tour to Europe and Brazil for the first time.
I was there. Back row of London Arena.
Binoculars on. That tour grossed over $40.5 million. So well done, Britney. And no rest for our girl. She kicks off 2001 by hosting the American Music Awards, then appeared as a special guest at the Super Bowl halftime show with Aerosmith and NSYNC. What a moment, right? Do you remember seeing that and all the kind of press around it, JB?
I remember, yeah, the outfit. Like, I don't think in 2001 I knew sort of what a Super Bowl was or a Super Bowl halftime, if I'm perfectly honest.
Some sports thing.
Not only did she perform alongside Aerosmith, NSYNC, Nelly and Mary J. Blige, they all performed Walk This Way. I mean, was that the blueprint for the GA and Sugar Babes collab? I think so. I mean, I'm a JC Chassé stan. I want to find some like leatherette trousers that work for thick thighs like he has. He doesn't have thick thighs. I'm saying I need an adaption for me because thick thighs save lives and I need something shiny and leathery like those to hit the dance floor with. But that was amazing. And Brittany was incredible, shined, really held her own in there.
Now, at this time, Brittany also signed a $7 million deal with Pepsi. Wow. And we're going to see a lot of the kind of fruits of this particular partnership in this episode. She put out an exclusive CD with them of songs and content that was like Pepsi.
Yeah.
Focused.
Promo moment. But also for the Super Bowl that year, the Pepsi sponsorship deal, Brittany, the joy of Pepsi ad. Now, this was more like a music video than an ad. This is one of the best commercials of all time. It gave us this high-end music video style, choreographed by Wade Robson. Like, they couldn't...
He also wrote the song.
Bloody hell.
The Joy of Pepsi. I checked the credits. I was like, wow, Wade. Greedy. He's got to have it. It's my song, my lyrics, production, choreo.
My steps.
I am the joy of Pepsi, not you.
But we also, yeah, have the nod to Bye 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 by NSYNC in there, which is quite clever, but taking from Bye 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 to instead Bye 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 Pepsi. The joy of Pepsi. When I think of sort of pop star endorsements and collaborations, this is the blueprint. And yes, we know she wasn't the first. Spice Girls had worked with Pepsi. Madonna had worked with Pepsi. They'd been working with pop stars for years. But to me, this is like the undisputed blueprint.
I mean, it really shows the budget back in the day, you know, to do stuff
like
this.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at like the amount of dancers she has there, like, I don't know if we ever see that many dancers in a music video for Britney.
So that is the first of this kind of rollout deal. And we're going to see many more moments like that. I feel like they should be paying us for a mention, though, in this episode.
I know. Send us a case.
Yeah. And then from March onwards, 2001, she began filming her film debut, Crossroads. And that basically is the next 6 months, doing the movie, simultaneously recording the Britney album. Those two projects definitely are like going hand in hand, running parallel to each other. As we know, there's no soundtrack for Crossroads because I think we're meant to receive this Britney album as a companion piece. But I think it was smart, isn't it, to not officially do a soundtrack, because what even is the purpose of that? You want all the focus to be on Britney's album, don't you?
Exactly. Like, Crossroads was always very much a Britney vehicle. So why would you create a competitor for when an album's coming out? I think there arguably was like a, there was like a mini six track CD soundtrack at the time, but I think it was very much more of a promo situation. Like,
was it like a compilation of,
yeah, of a few songs
that are,
I mean, track one, yeah, is I Love Rock and Roll, karaoke sing along. Nothing says this isn't the definitive place to go than that. So there's other stuff on there, but yeah, all arrows pointed to the Britney album because that is the destination.
But I think it's just really amazing to see Britney having this very major side quest of doing film at this time. But also, she's growing up. She has been listening to different kind of music, and she's more hands-on with this album and the direction than she was with the first two. She said she was listening to a lot of hip-hop and R&B while she was on the Oops tour. She told her label, Jive, that she wanted to work with different producers. In her words, she wanted this next album to be, quote, nastier and funkier. And I totally get that. I mean, that would be in my A&R brief as well.
Oh, and she did indeed
get nasty. So as a result, sessions were set up with the Neptunes, who had been working with NSYNC, Jay-Z and Justin Timberlake. This is her first time working with Pharrell and the team. And also her boyfriend at the time, Justin Timberlake, is also involved in this album. Further to that, the established hitmakers behind her last two albums, like legends, Max Martin, Dark Child, Rami Yacoub, they're all back.
Gotta be there.
Now, JB, apparently in this time, they tried to set up sessions with Missy Elliott and Timbaland.
Can you believe?
The schedules didn't align, but that would have been so cool. I think we would have gotten like a Britney Hard Candy style album.
Wow. We still could. That would be incredible. I mean, maybe like if Britney had worked with Timbaland, maybe it would have sounded a little bit more in the zone-y. Like maybe it would have been a step closer to that 2007 Timbaland sound.
Yeah, definitely. But I think it also would have scared the audience a little bit. So they needed the old collaborators to still be on board just to remind people, hey, the teen pop Britney that you like is being zhuzhed up. But, you know, she's also trying different sounds, you know. So this album is definitely a reflection of that 50-50 world 100%, that she's in.
100%. And also all works together.
It works because we just loved it all, didn't we?
Fucking love it, mate.
Fucking loved it all. So, JB, I think it's time to get into the debut. I think it's time to get into the first single of this album. I'm a Slave for You. Oh, my God. Okay, talk about really making a bold move here.
Not a Max Martin for the lead single for the first time on a Britney album.
They knew what they were doing. This was definitely taking a big risk. And the intention is to shock, right? You know, we talk about some artists doing a buzz single that's kind of a little bit left field just to get people talking. And fucking hell, were people talking about this?
And just listen. All you people look at me like I'm a little girl. Well, did you ever think it'd be okay for me to step into this world? Always saying, little girl, don't step into the club. Well, I'm just trying to find out why, cause dancing's what I love.
I was 10 years old. No, it wasn't too much for me at all. I wanted to get in that club. I wanted to be sexy and sweaty. And I straight away, because it was poppy, it was dancey, it was breathy, it was edgy, but like just it was so infectious and instantly absolutely loved it. What were your first impressions?
I'll be very honest, JB. I didn't like it the first few times I heard it. I thought,
you thought, what's she done?
This is a choice. I think at that time as well, maybe not as many pop stars were embracing this kind of style of music where it was minimalist. There's not that much of a tune to it. It's definitely more of a vibe. It's more dance focused. And I think we're used to Britney like hitting these really big melodies. And this one is really the opposite of that. You know, it's giving more of a sultry performance. I just thought, oh my God, she's gone off the rails. Like, what's going on here? Is this what the rest of the album's like? But once I saw the video and like really deeped with the video, I was like, okay, this is iconic.
It was it's like,
it took the video to win me over, really.
This Slave for You is your biology, how it was for me. Took a beat, had to take it all in.
Yeah.
I loved it then and I love it now because she came on the scene with Baby. Oops is like, how do you take Baby but level it up? And then this is a quote-unquote grown-up Britney.
It was a big conversation starter and it really served the purpose for that. You know, you really needed to swing big with something like this to get people talking and to get them prepped for the messaging of what she was coming out with in this time. And obviously, you know, we're going to talk about the MTV performance with the Python. But all that together, really now looking back, what a huge pop culture moment that really went on to inspire a whole generation of artists. You hear people like Selena, Miley referencing this. Like, this is such a moment. Addison Rae, all these girls, like, it really made an impression. So it goes down to this Slave moment, doesn't it? Like,
yeah,
it really
because
does.
Because I think you could look at Baby and Oops has been incredibly iconic. That is my opinion. But you could also look at them as being equally iconic, but also slightly sort of novelty, or they have aged or they are young. That those are the bits that aren't my opinion, but I could see them being that. Whereas for us then and for us now and for the pop girlies and for everyone, Slave for You is always going to be cool. Like, that's an always aspirational sort of pop star template that you want to be.
It just is effortlessly cool. Yeah, you're right about it. So shout out to the Neptunes, Pharrell and Chad, who did this track. Now, it was originally intended for Janet Jackson.
Wow.
Along with another track that ends up on the album called Boys.
Do you think it's interesting, looking back at it, that the conversation and comparisons were always like, she's the new Madonna, complimentarily. But there wasn't much, looking, when you look back in the history books, the conversation should be more really like, she's the new Janet, or like, there doesn't need to be she's a Janet's new anyone. Daughter. But yeah, Janet, she's like...
She's Janet's daughter, really, like, and... Britney has repeatedly said that Janet's a huge inspiration to her, and it really is very prevalent in her work, especially in this time, you know, and the next album, etc. So shout out to that. Also, Britney was saying about the song, it's just about me wanting to go out and forget who I am and dance and have a good time. That's kind of where I'm at right now. I love working, but at the same time, I love having a good time.
The 2025 answer would be, it's just a bit of fun, isn't it?
Yeah, I just want to be me.
David Ann, shall we talk about the music video for this? Because as you say, the music video, you can't listen to the song without seeing the music video in your head. So we have the music video directed by Francis Lawrence, who directed 4 out of 5 of the Hunger Games films.
Wow.
We have Britney in a sexy, sweaty city club meets sauna situation. They have the sweat that you aspire to have that I will never have. It's like, glowy, it's a glowy glisten that's sexy as opposed to like, oh my God.
I love this quote from the director when he was talking about the concept of the video. You know, he's like, he really wanted to move beyond the kind of slick dance clubs of like LA, New York, those types of typical club videos. And he said he wanted it to have a real global feel. So he said, I came up with this concept of having this club be in this abandoned Asian bathhouse.
Oh.
And having it filled with young world travelers. The kind of people who go to these far exotic places, go to a place like this. And can I just say, JB, as someone who grew up in Malaysia, that opening shot of this video where she's at the balcony looking out the kind of concrete, brutalist buildings, you know, it's meant to, the director intended for it to be inspired by Kowloon,
wow.
Hong Kong, places like that. And it really, the architecture looks so familiar. Like, it just really took me to a place when I saw this video for the first time. Like, wow, I know exactly places like that.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And then even like on top of that, like the set and the interior of the building obviously all complements that, but also so does the color palette of the shots in general. Just like the tones, the lighting, even down to like what's used for Britney's eyeshadow, it all just complements a very global aesthetic, I would say.
I think what I love about it is just that kind of slight griminess about it. You know, it's in the environment, it's in the textures of everything. Like, it's, I can't explain it, but it just, there's something about it that doesn't look typical and glossy.
I do personally feel that, and it is all just down to timing, because you know how much I love all the girls.
Yes.
But she set the template with Baby One More Time that I feel like we were still following till 2001 and some people still following after. But then I think she reset the template with this one. Because then it was like, oh, okay, it is okay to be like edgy and sexy and...
We want to look sweaty and gloss, you know, like just a bit dewy. Yeah, that became the new trend. Yeah, for sure.
What I love about this Britney era in a whole is that you're never that far away from some kind of like flowy sleeve.
She loved a flowy sleeve in this era. You know, it's all about the low rise trousers. Showing the midriff is what it's all about. Britney loved to flash the midriff in this era, as she should, because, you know, it's signature and it's gorgeous. The iconic looks here, you know, we've got Britney in 2 different outfits. The pink bra with a flowing fabric, you know, kind of crisscrossed around her body, the matching panties
over the trousers.
Oh my God. Oh, first time I saw that, I was like, that's nasty. I was so shook by that. And I think this kind of very signature look, you know, we're still seeing the pop girlies of today.
Oh, yeah.
Try to recreate it in their own style. Tate McRae, Tyler.
The difference between me and you, you as a teenager in 2001 shocked. Me as a 10-year-old in Essex, good on her.
I'm going to wear my underwear outside now. Speaking of outfits, the second look that she has is this cream top, isn't it?
And then, like, it's not a chunky belt yet, but we're, like, next year, couple of years is going to all be about the chunky belt. But this is kind of like the prelude in, like, what's going around the low-rise jean.
The designer behind this look is Alina Campbell. So she created several crop tops of this era for Britney. In fact, a couple of her pieces have been worn in 3 different Britney videos in this time and several live performances. And she was interviewed by Page Six a couple of years ago. And just reflecting on how that style has been replicated in the current generation, she said, "I feel privileged to have been one of the several designers who got to share in Britney's vision of herself, this powerful young woman who owned her sexuality unapologetically. The crop top and the low-rise jeans look trickled down to everyone else, especially Britney's industry peers, but now Gen Z is bringing it back," she said. Back then, though, everybody wanted to wear what Britney wore, and they wanted to look like Britney wearing it. That was always the tough part. No one could pull off the look quite like her. I think at the time it can feel like, okay, everything's in a rush. We got to get everything together. It's only like 20 something years on. You look back and be like, damn, you made history. You know, you influenced a generation.
And if you think, and I don't want to keep comparing it to the last 2 campaigns, but like Baby started in a outfit, like a costume, as did Oops. Whereas this is the first one that is like, here's Britney's sort of current fashion. Yeah, it's pop star and maybe you won't wear it to the shops, but like, it's a pop star look.
Exactly. And it was so signature at this time. Like, it had a certain cohesion to it. Definitely. So shout out to the styling duo, Kurt Swanson and Bart Mueller, aka Kurt and Bart, who worked with her in this time, 2001 to 2004 period.
Wow.
They later went on to do the Hunger Games movies.
Right now, it could be in the same world. Like, you go over, there's the camera just goes across the city and the Hunger Games are happening. But here's an underground party that Britney's having.
Yeah. Now, JB, do you have a favourite shot or favourite moment in this video?
David, yes, you have to. We have to talk about the choreography. Because this choreography, I would say, is arguably Britney's most famous, and this is the one that gets people most excited about. It's the choreo that dancers love to do. Like, it's still a moment of, we've seen the music video dancers get back together, like, at some point within the last 10 years, and it's a, like, perform it on stage. Aww. And it's always a real moment. And whenever, like, Britney had been performing the original choreo, people get extremely excited about it. And
yeah. And you're talking about the one in the chorus where it's like one arm up and then the other 90 degrees to it towards the camera. And yeah, you're doing a belly dance, kind of pivot, swirl.
Yeah, and the whole
slave, and the everything is just so fluid. But also then we get the kind of sharp movements that's very teen pop of the time, right? Mm. So she's still showing you that energy, that kind of sharp pop, 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 but also mixing it with some flowier movements.
Yeah, it's like hip hop at a nightclub, but with a few flourishes of sort of contemporary in there as well. Do you have a favourite shot in the video, David?
I had to pause the frame because I've always been fixated about that shot of her where she's backlit against this wall.
Oh, beautiful.
And I was like, what is that? And I looked at it closely. It's empty water cooler bottles.
Yeah, so cool, isn't it?
Yeah, because
they've all been drinking. They've been so thirsty.
Exactly. So it really ties in with this video's theme of, like, it's very hot out here. Everyone's throwing empty plastic bottles. There's no water anywhere. The minute it rains, everyone runs outside. So obviously it makes sense that she's dancing in front of a wall of empty water coolers. Sick. But it's such a simple look, but it's like, I remember looking at the video, I was like, I wonder what that is.
Yeah. And then the shots, a few before that, just her in the toilets, like, dancing against the sink and the mirror.
Oh, yeah. Did you see the Brilliant. Behind the scenes where they got a gecko for... I don't remember seeing a gecko in a video.
Didn't make the cut, darling. That's showbiz.
That poor gecko, I hope he got his fee anyway.
Yeah.
But I remember them bringing it out in the behind the scenes, and Brittany's like, what's that? You know, your co-star for today. It's just going to be on the wall. That's it. I would have definitely run away. I'm not doing a scene with a gecko, honey.
Absolutely brilliant. Right. Shall we move to, if you're not thinking about the music video for this song, you are thinking about this performance. And
speaking of reptiles, yeah.
Yeah, speaking of reptiles, and if Baby and Oops are used visual costumes, this one too, you get out a green bra and you get out a snake. And you're ready to be Britney.
Yeah, and just like, you know, little, I don't know what you would improvise with, ripped denim shorts. That'll do.
That'll do. Some boots. So if you don't know what we're talking about, 2001 VMAs, Britney performing Slay For You. I would say, as well as this being peak Britney, and I don't mean this is Britney at her best. I mean, to me, she's always at her best. I mean, peak when you think of Britney.
As a visual.
It's Britney, yeah. As a visual.
One of the most recognisable imagery, yeah.
When you think of VMAs, this is peak VMAs.
Actually true, yeah. This and The Kiss with Madonna, years later.
Yes.
So Britney's years, given
like,
them many.
Like 2 years, if that.
Oh, is it really?
Years. It's 03 or 04, yeah.
She's given us so many VMA moments. Like, Britney is the VMAs.
She is the VMAs. That's why you still see the girlies, like, referencing her at the VMAs to this day, because
Queen.
She's hand in hand and making it what it is. I cannot pass a toy snake without doing having a picture with it and being like, I'm Britney.
You today at Toys R Us.
Yeah, I was at my nephew's birthday party a few years ago and there was a toy snake and I had my eye on it the whole time. And I was like, I can't wait for these little shits to go so I can take a picture of that snake.
It's Uncle Joel's time.
Me sat in the corner drinking Prosecco, like, when are they all going to leave so I can get my Britney pic?
Yeah.
So we have what is appearing at the beginning as, like, what would you say, like a rainforest?
So Britney said the concept was a dystopian club in a jungle kind of vibe. You know, she wanted to bring the jungle on stage. Joel, I had to watch this performance back because there were so many details on stage that I missed. I think everyone's
too many details for a pre-HD world, you know?
It kind of is true, yeah. It's very hard to make it all, like, capture all that for a short performance. There was a live tiger on stage. I completely forgot that was a thing. Because I think, again, everyone's so fixated on that one imagery of her with the snake. She had a tiger up there in a cage. They had three rotating cages raised up on this stage. Britney arrives in one cage with a real life tiger. The production people said, you know, the tiger was the best fed member of the crew. Hopefully no crews were fed to the tiger, let's just say. She struts on stage, jumps on the back of one of the dancers. You know, people are in, like, zebra-themed costume. It's a jungle out there.
It's theatre and extravagance without being musical theatre.
No, but all the parts, it's set up like a theatre production, basically.
Would you be, like, shitting yourself if you were Britney, like, starting on stage in a cage with a tiger or being handed that snake? What one would you rather do?
I don't want to be with the tiger. I'm sorry. That's just not good. That's not okay for me. The snake I can sort of handle, you know, because I feel like you can tell when a snake's about to do something. They don't move particularly fast. Whereas a tiger could just pounce. You just don't know.
Davey, do you want to pray you never own a snake attack? Because that clip will come back to haunt you. Touch wood.
What would you rather?
I don't know, neither. What I'm going to suggest is that can all be on stage and I'll come down from the ceiling.
Separately.
And it can happen around me.
Far away from me. On
and
a different
I'll get on
stage.
The stairs like Britney does. Or I'll be like, why don't I do the whole thing from the stairs?
Yeah. I mean, working with animals, live animals, is always an interesting challenge. So I felt like they really wanted to make a statement with this performance. But at the same time, it's like, did we really need the live tiger, or could it have just been a Muppet?
Because it didn't come out, did it? It just stayed in the cage.
Yeah, I'll imagine if they walked the tiger on stage.
I think probably we wouldn't have it on stage today.
Animal rights activists.
Yeah. Animal rights. But the budget was big and it was like, we'll get it and we'll just have to have it.
Now, speaking of the snake, when Britney was on Oprah, I was screaming watching this interview today. Oprah asking Britney, and the python, what was that supposed to represent? Call me a filthy gay man with a dirty mind, but my mind went somewhere else.
I'm surprised she didn't bring out the python and say to the python, you've been quiet today, python. Have you been, are you being silent or silent? Now, speaking of this song, Devo, we do also have a B-side, Intimidated. Bearing in mind, we've had this sort of like clubby Janet Jackson riffs. This could also be like an edgy club Janet Jackson-ish song.
Intimidated might be one of the tracks that appear as a B-side in this era that we don't see as a bonus track on any edition. So it's a pure B-side.
And I'm like, why didn't you just whack it on there, though?
Yeah, why not? What's another track? Yeah, just do it. So this is a Dark Child produced number, a dance R&B number. And I love that it's a strong, confident track. It's saying to the guy, step up and show me who you are. I think it's a good bridge between the world of Oops, I Did It Again, the album, and this new one they're about to go into. Because if you're in for, if you were shocked like I was with I'm a Slave for You, Intimidated is going to make it less intimidating. Yeah.
You're listening to track two, you're like, right, Britney, I was intimidated. You just know me so well. Slave for You, David, charts around the world, number 7 in Australia. And then here in the UK, number 4, but you number 1 on the UK indie charts. We also have 6 in Spain, 10 in Romania, 2 in Portugal, 3 in Norway, 13 in New Zealand, 33 in Japan, 6 in Ireland, 6 in Greece, 3 in Germany, 8 in France, and 5 on the European Hot 100 singles. Then in the US, it peaked at 27, but interestingly, it took 3 months to get to 27. But it did peak at number 4 on the US dance club songs and 8 on the US dance single sales, 15 on US pop airplay. Now, all of this around the world, like these are really successful. But also, do you think globally it does look like maybe everyone's taken a little bit aback by this, like, edgier Brit?
I think so.
It isn't necessarily top 5.
Compared to, like, the blockbuster lead singles of her previous album, this definitely feels like more of a press statement moment than a huge charting success. Because I'm surprised at number 27, if I'm honest, in America. But then looking into it, they didn't even release a CD single for this in the States. Mm. It was like radio vinyl release only. It feels like it was definitely a bigger push overseas than it is back home for Britney.
Mm.
But also, I think what's interesting around this time is it was around 9/11.
Mm.
Between that VMA's performance that we talked about and the single launch, 9/11 happened. The world changed. Britney was literally on the plane to Australia when it happened.
Gosh.
The minute her plane landed, her and her team were pulled aside to lounge and they were shown the news. And so she cancelled her Aussie press conference and just went back home. Like, it just, she didn't feel right to be doing all that. So yeah, that's kind of the funny period in the world that we're in with Slave for You. Mm. So I also wonder if that kind of impacted things. But also, like, you know, with the UK and around the world, it got a mid-October release. So maybe the momentum is passed after the VMA's performance.
Yeah, as you said, a strange and awful time in the world. In my mind, this was like a good few years after Glitter, just in terms of like a pop star coming out with a big album, big film. But actually, music's being released around the same time. Mm. The album's out, Britney's album's out only a month after Glitter.
Mm.
And then the movie is out the next year. But maybe that is the difference. Maybe where it worked for Britney is we're going to point you to the Britney album. But also, if you're not interested in the movie, there's still just a brand new Britney album. Whereas Glitter, where they were both called the same name and it really was a soundtrack, they went two hand in hand.
They were putting all their eggs in one basket with that. Yeah, for sure. So it's all very interesting. Yeah, just to see the strategy. Speaking of the state of the world and everything that was going on, in October 2001, Sony Columbia was already planning to do an all-star tribute cover of What's Going On by Marvin Gaye. It was going to be, you know, in benefit of AIDS programs in Africa. But after 9/11, they decided that, yeah, a portion of the song's proceeds would also benefit the American Red Cross September 11 fund. And this was an iconic gathering of the stars for this charity single. Jermaine Dupri and Bono produced the radio single version. Not only was Britney on it, but Christina Aguilera, Destiny's Child, Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, our boy Darren Hayes, J-Lo.
Mm.
I mean, it just Mary J. Blige, Alicia Keys, Gwen Stefani, Eve, Nelly Furtado, like so many people. I was shook. Iconic.
I think I didn't know about this until we lived together and you told me about it, and I was absolutely shocked.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, isn't it? And I only just found out this week that there was like a quote unquote London version, and it was just Chris Martin and like Bono or something.
Club 7.
That's what they should have fucking done. But no, it was just Chris Martin and Bono. I was like, boring.
What, just like interwoven into this version? No, or
just the two of
just
them.
Just on their own.
Right.
No Nelly.
Nah. It's like there's so many like UK artists that you could have tapped up for this.
Yeah.
Where was Miss Dynamite?
Mystique.
Where was Jamelia?
Yeah.
Tommy Kitten. Where was Mystique? Yeah, Tommy Kits.
Hearsay.
Yeah. S
Club. Liberty X.
Victoria Beckham.
Yeah. What's going on? So then, David, let's move to October and November 2001 with the release of the Britney album, released at the end of October in Japan and then November everywhere else globally, with a lovely deluxe edition later on down the line.
Mm, gotta have it. JB, shall we start with the photography for this album? Love it. Photographed by Stephen Klein, who has worked with Madonna on a lot of projects over the years. He would later do the Confessions on a Dance Floor album and also Hard Candy. Also worked with Lady Gaga a lot later. Directed the Alejandro video.
Ah.
Absolute legend. Now, absolute this album legend. Cover image, I feel like this is a gorgeous classic portrait of our Brit.
Don't I have this framed in my living room? Don't I have this as the vinyl above the TV? I've got a Britney album.
You're asking
I'm sure
me?
It's this.
You live there.
I am going to go as far as say I have it framed in my living room. You know, when you look at something every day, you forget.
You just forget. Yeah, no, I get it. I think this is
ringing a
bell.
She's part of the family.
She's part of the furniture, literally.
Yeah.
So this gorgeous album cover, I mean, I think it really captures the kind of purity and the growth in Britney, you know, growing into this beautiful young woman. But the pose and the expression, I think it still captures like a certain innocence and a kind of subtle sensuality to it, right? What do you think?
Yeah, because it's obviously it's incredibly styled. It's perfect. It's quite pop arty with the different colours. But it could also be a candid outtake of like just an ordinary 19-year-old girl candid picture from a picnic with friends or something. And, you know, like, yeah, she might be wearing a crop top, but it's covered up because she's like leaning forward, but not in a way of like,
yeah,
here's my bazoombas. It's just, it is like a fairly, I don't like the word, but innocent pose. Yeah.
I don't know if you're getting this from looking at the image, but I've always thought that it's a nice nod to her kind of Louisiana roots, because it does look like, yeah, she's sitting on a porch, right? With the abandoned mattress, the kind of weeds growing in the grass.
What my favorite thing of the artwork is that on the back cover, you had this, like, all the different Britneys in different colors. Did you see that image?
Yes, love. Always and love that. That
is so, to me, that is like the album, because it's her just like dancing, having a night out. And I had a poster of that in my bedroom.
Yeah.
Like priority wall poster. All the Britneys.
And this ensemble with her in the bra and the kind of big flowy sleeve, which she loved in this era.
Yeah.
And the ripped jeans, low-rise jeans, huge belt.
Chunky belt.
Chunky belt, gotta have it. I love with the album graphic design as well that it's all CMYK colors.
Mmm. Look at you.
You know when you're like sending your printer for like a test print?
Yeah.
You put in a new ink cartridge. These are the colors.
I always get so confused when they're like, is it CMYK or RGB or whatever? I'm like, I don't know.
I don't know. What colors do you
just
need?
Just print it. Yeah. Just print it and we'll find out.
Now, that designer that we talked about before, Alina, also designed the crop top that she wears on this album. And she was saying that she had like literally no time to pull it together for this shoot because she was asked in the last minute. But once it made the album cover shot, she got a call from the stylist on set being like, the good news is the top you made has made the album cover. The bad news is she's leaning forward, so you can't see the lovely design. But there are other press shots where Britney's laying on her back on these abandoned mattresses. Mm. And you can see this beautiful midriff and all the intricacies, you know, with the belt buckles and everything. Gorgeous.
Well done, Alina.
Well done, girly. You got the shot in the end.
Right, Devo, album. So as you said in the intro, she'd worked with previous collaborators, but also Neptunes.
Is this the first time that we see Britney work with Josh Schwartz and Brian Kiroff? Because I feel like they're constant, regular songwriting partners for her in this time. But I also don't know if it started with the last album.
No, I don't see him.
So yeah, it means that it's a new journey for them. How exciting, because this is the first album where Britney's writing actively for.
Mm.
You know, she didn't really write anything for the last album, right? Apart from Dear Diary.
The first two albums were really back to back as well. So there wasn't a lot of room for new collaborators. A lot of songs that made it onto Oops were kind of already in the works for the Baby album. And they're kind of like, Baby One More Time and Oops are kind of like Spice and Spice World in terms of like, you could play them back to back and they could be one complete world. Whereas, yeah, this is the time for Britney to make her mark and for these wider collaborators to come in, which is wild because the gap's actually probably shorter between the albums. Let's go through some incredible tracks, shall we?
Absolutely. So, guys, you know what we're like at Right Back At You. We'll talk about the single in time when it's being released. We're doing album highlights right now. So next part is when we get into the remaining singles of this era. I want you to start first, JB. Pick an album highlight.
I am going to go with, for my first one, Bombastic Love.
Really? Okay.
Why are you shocked by that?
Yeah, it's a little bit you. Yeah, I can see it.
A little bit you. How do you manage to make that derogatory?
Do I have to say like complimentary at the end of it now if I feel like something I say is shady?
What we should allude to is, or what we should touch on is, in the working of this album, the Crossroads movie was in mind. So songwriters were given the script, they were going through it. But I think it's quite clear when there are songs that really were for Britney and when there were songs for Crossroads.
It's not meant to be like soundtracky moments that's for Britney's character. It's more like the script was inspiring some of the songwriting and themes. It's not necessarily to do with her character always, yeah.
But I do wonder, in a wider scope, it does feel like thinking about movies as a whole is just in the vernacular. Because in this song you have, it's going to be exactly like in the movies. Like, we have Cinderella, and this isn't me just skimming through a load of songs. In Overprotected, you have Action. Like, people, I think, have feature film in their minds, whether they know it or not.
I never even thought about this with Overprotected when they go, Action! The synergy with Crossroads. Ugh.
And I think that one is purposeful because they use it for the film. Bombastic Love could have been from the first two albums, but it has a Britney rework. But it is Maxi Moo. It is Rami.
Maxi Moo.
But to me, I love it because it's like that production that I love.
You do also love the kind of classic teen pop Max Martin work, Max Martin and Rami work for Britney at this time, yeah.
And this sounds like if you had a song that is POV from a romantic lead in a teen movie or a rom-com, this is that song. This song, maybe more than any other song on this album, I love to just sing along to. I feel like me and Britney just really get to flourish. With it. When we duet.
Love.
Love. All right, then, Davo, what about yous?
I'm going to go for it because we're not treating this. Obviously, it was a single only in France, but we're going to talk about it as an album highlight because we love you, France, but it's not all about you.
And you didn't even give us a video.
Yeah. So we're going to shine a spotlight right now on my favorite album track. Anticipating.
It's like arguably the poppiest one on the whole album.
It's got this gorgeous, bubbly disco pop feel, which we don't see anywhere else on the album. And I would say probably never in Britney's discography has she done something this deliberately disco pop. But she is so heavily involved in this one. You know, it's written by her with Josh Schwartz and Brian Kirov. The kind of vibe that they were referencing was definitely the feel-good energy of Janet Jackson's All For You.
Yeah. You can hear that so much.
You can hear that. And I think these singles came out in the same year. So, and also there's another very subtle Jackson nod in the lyrics. I wanna rock with you. Da, 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 da. Wow. Oh, you see? I mean, I think Britney loves a bit of the Jacksons.
The lost Jackson sister.
Yeah, child of the Jacksons. Also, fun fact, Nile Rodgers, the legendary Nile Rodgers, played guitar on this track. Now, allegedly, he didn't charge a fee to do this. He just wanted to bring his daughter in to meet Britney.
Oh, I mean, that's enough payment, isn't it? Yeah, I love this. I think it deserved to have been a full-fledged single because I think it would do a lot for... In terms of the singles, it's only like... the ballad that is like still really poppy Britney. And if they wanted something else for that, if they were ever worried they were going too far one way, which they shouldn't be, this would certainly tick a box.
So JB, I know we didn't get a music video for this, right? But this was used in a Toyota car commercial.
Wow.
I want to say it was in Asia only because that's my experience of it, but it could have been in America or whatever. I was so shook when I heard it on TV randomly one day when I was visiting my family in Malaysia. Like, they just had the telly on and I heard a bit of Anticipating. I was like, what? And I turned and there was this ad with this car zooming around this slick inner city. And then you see Britney.
Wow.
Her face is projected on the building sides and it's kind of like Britney's turning wherever the car's going. She's following it with her eyes because she can't take her eyes off this gorgeous, very basic Toyota.
Hey, look, if you're getting the check, you're getting the check. Well, I hope she had a great shopping trip with the money from that. All right. Can I do bonus track?
I want to do a bonus track. So yeah, you're definitely welcome to do a bonus track. Listen, seek forgiveness, not permission, as the old saying yeah. goes. So just go yeah. for it.
No, I got in trouble for that this week. So
anyway, meeting with HR.
I would say, David, that this is one of the best Britney songs of all time, Before the Goodbye.
Oh, yes. Go on. Yep. This was on my list as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I didn't really hear this song until like about maybe 15 years ago. And it was just one of those, the first time I heard it, I was like, what the fuck? Complimentary. Like, how have I not heard this before? And then like instantly need it on repeat. Like Britney, European club banger. Now I know the argument is that it was too European and that's why it is a bonus track on global editions and not on the US edition, but I think it fits wonderfully in the would fit wonderfully in the album.
It's co-written by Albert with Josh and Brian, who we mentioned before, and the
B2,
not the tower, not the telephone network, but a renowned electronic music producer who is famous for working with NSYNC. He did pop. Quite pioneering in this very distinct technique he does, where it's very, he does this kind of stuttering editing. If you listen to pop, you know what we mean.
Yeah.
And you can hear bits of that production in Before the Goodbye as well. Mm. And what I love about this, and it's probably what you love about it as well, is the drama. A crying at the disco moment. And this is Britney, because we don't have a crying at the disco moment on this album, do we? We don't have Stronger.
It's not even crying at the disco. It's like crying at Berghain. Like crying at the club. Now, this really did get sort of hype around the time. Entertainment Weekly even wrote an article about it called The Inside Story of Britney Spears' Missing Hit.
Did a pop gay write it?
Yeah, probably. Brian Hyatt. Hi, Brian. April 4th, 2002. Entertainment Weekly. An import-only track shows an alternate direction for the pop princess. Find out why she had it bumped from her US album. I think that's a bit more clickbaity. People in America with a standard Britney edition. I think it was an early LimeWire fave.
Oh my God, platinum on LimeWire. Yeah, we all know those songs. Yeah.
She also did work on another song with BT that was unreleased. When I Say So, it is online. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. If you go on to Rhymes with Shoe Tube. It's good. It's really good. It's really good. Sounds kind of similar-ish to Before the Goodbye. Give us a deluxe with everything. Britney recorded 23 tracks for this album. I bet there was no, like, filler.
Exactly. You know, she's only going in to record the surefire stuff. She's filming a movie at the same time. They're not wasting their time recording something that's not likely to be used.
No. Right. What's next for you, Devo?
I would love to give a shout out to another instant fave of mine on the album, Lonely, produced by Dark Child, written with Britney, Josh and Brian again. Think of all the time when I waste it. Strong, confident, punchy. And again, another real nod to Queen Janet Jackson.
It's not rocky, but it has a powerful rocky essence.
Yeah, it has that riff to it. You know, you think about Janet songs like What About, Black Cat. Like, it has that kind of edge and that kind of attitude bristling through it. Britney herself said, this is an attitude song. I mean, we played around with that a lot in the studio. At the very last minute, we put a rap on it. It's real funky, different. And I've never done a rock song like this before. So it's one of my favorites.
I'll take it back. It is a rock song then.
Britney says it's rock. Yeah. And she says, it's a different Britney. I think.
What's a girl to do?
But I just love the lyrics of just like, think of all the time that I wasted. Think of all the times that I took you back. Ain't no way I'll be lonely. I don't want to let you back in. You know, it's like, stop wasting my time, bitch.
That's your rap.
Yeah, there you go.
So what I'm going to do next up is Cinderella.
I knew it. This is a bit of a JB complimentary.
Yes, because it's Max Martin, it's Rami again. It's like if Stronger was reading a fairy tale story.
This maybe could be the prequel to Stronger. You know, it tells a story about a girl breaking free from a one-sided relationship. And then you go into Stronger Than Yesterday.
But yeah, just another one that is just amazing to sing along to. Like, you feel it in your bones, you know?
You do. And like, she kicks it off so strong. I love a pop song that kicks it strong with the first verse. I used to be your girlfriend and I know I did it well. Da, 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 da.
Here I am. Amazing.
So musical, that bit, isn't it?
Yeah. Da, 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 da. I don't believe in fairy tales.
I've had enough. I'm not gonna stay. It really is like a musical number. I'm obsessed with this song. It's so good.
If you look at the songs she co-wrote on, she had stuff to say.
Oh, yeah. So I'm going to pick one more, JB, and this one is actually new to me. I don't know how this song passed me by all these years. We didn't have it in our Aussie edition, to be fair. I Run Away.
This is one that really was written with Crossroads in mind. From the POV of the mam.
For the mum, yeah. The mum character played by Kim Cattrall. Yeah. I think, yeah, it was said that ultimately the label felt that the ballad was like too slow for this body of work. There was only room for one ballad and it was the one that was going to be the lead single off the movie Moment. So yeah, this came out as a European bonus track, but I was listening to this all week and I was like, God, this is tearing me up. Pardon the pun, you know, not trying to reference another 2000s pop act. But it was tearing me up in bits. I was like, Britney, this is gorgeous.
You had a little cry.
I did, yeah. I Run Away.
I think it's also, well, stunning vocal from Britney
stunning
Spears.
Stunning vocal, I was going to say, yeah.
You listen to these songs, like, I don't know how anyone could, like, try and say she's not a vocalist. Like, it's all there.
Yeah. She's a great vocal performer, for sure. A Britney song sounds like Britney because she's such a distinct vocalist. And no one can do, like, no one can do her, you know. She's
no one can do pop. Many have tried. But I would also say it sounds like a little bit like 90s Madonna-ish.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Just that sort of like, maybe like Raelite's like Little Sister or something.
Okay.
Like a Raelite album track, Little Sister. Which also, maybe they did think a bit Madonna-y in mind for the Kim Cattrall character. I'm going to go with it.
That's
I'm
a Joel Babington theory, yeah.
All right, well, look, we have to talk about What It's Like to Be Me, written by Justin Timberlake and Wade Robson. Wade had been working with Britney for years as choreographer. Justin obviously has known Britney since he was a kid. They were going out together at the time.
And, you know, I think Wade and NSYNC worked together as well. This really feels like a cool, punchy, alpha female song that is being pulled from the world of NSYNC meets Michael Jackson. but I love just hearing Britney do it.
Don't you get it twisted, boy. I want you to, but you got my heart to win before I let you in. And this deceives you, baby. I'm not the other is leaving.
It's basically saying, like, it's not easy to be me. If you want to be with me, you really have to get to know me. Get on my level, bitch. It's like, what? That's my other rap verse.
We got it.
Yeah. Walk a mile in my shoes. Can't you see that if you want to stay around, you've got to figure me out. Take your time or you lose. This is my game, my rules. That's powerful for Britney to say. I love it.
Also potentially like a little hint of what Justin's solo career is going to sound like.
I think we can hear his backing vocals on this,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he loves it, doesn't he?
The vibe switches with Joel Babington. Yeah, loves it, doesn't he?
Loves the sound of his own voice, that one.
Getting in there any chance he can get.
I find it interesting that this song isn't referenced that much. Like, even in press at the time, like, oh, Britney's done a song with Justin.
I think it's a really cool track, and I do like it a lot. But when you've got Overprotected as the single, and that is such a strong narrative, this is kind of in a similar vein and a similar kind of attitude to it. You're going to focus on Overprotected.
As much as it is like pop and R&B and dance, it is a bit rocky as well.
Synergy with Lonely. Yeah, I think this album ties in very well together. I know the singles and some points are like kind of standalone-ish. I would say it's cohesive for an album with different players that haven't worked together on a Britney album before. It kind of ties together really well.
I think we rightly praise In The Zone, Blackout and Glory for what they are. And I'm not saying this is better or worse, but like, I think we should be praising this album as equally as those.
I think so too. Yeah. Well, for very many reasons, as we said, you know, for a coming of age moment for Britney, it's very significant. And it's the first album that she really got involved in more than before. So that's got to be worth something.
So this album, David, did receive a nomination for Best Pop Vocal at the 45th Annual Grammy Awards in 2003. So isn't that interesting that this 2003, that's the year In The Zone comes out. But just how the timings and all of that in it. They absolutely love it. There also was Britney the Video's A Do Voodoo, which came out around this time. Had Slave For You on it. Had some teasers of Crossroads. Had the Pepsi commercial on it.
Mm.
Bits and Pieces. Feels a bit early to release Britney the Video's when we've got so much to come. But hey, they wanted the money, so they put it out. All right, so let's do charts for this incredible, incredible album. Number 4 in Australia. Thank you, David. I know you only got it from the library, but thank you anyway. Number 4 here in the UK as well. Look at that synergy.
Thank you, Joel. Yeah.
Number 3 in Ireland, actually one step ahead of us. 2 in Greece, number 1 in Germany, 2 in France, 1 in Canada, 17 in New Zealand, too edgy for them, 4 in Scotland, and number 1 smash hit album in America.
So the Britney album debuted at number 1 on the Billboard 200 with first week sales of over 745,000 copies, which was the second highest first week sales by a female artist at the time, behind her own records, Oops, I Did It Again, which did 1.3 million in its first week. So yeah, she was the first woman to have her first 3 albums debut at number 1 in the States. That's crazy.
It's gone on to sell over 10 million albums, one of the best-selling albums of the 21st century. I have at least 2 copies of it on vinyl. One framed.
Oh, yes, of course, yeah.
One for
you.
You
can remember.
Just to wrap out the year and this part, Britney had another big Pepsi commercial. They said, hey, Brit.
They really need to send us a case, yeah.
Yeah, they said, Britney. you signed on the dotted line. Let's get to work on the next ad. So they did Pepsi Generation, choreographed by Wade again. And this is Era's Pepsi's version.
Oh, yes. So this was a big commercial. Yeah.
Pepsi throughout the years, 80s, 60s, 50s, incredible. So many different looks and like just the chameleon that Britney Jean Spears is. And then ends using the track that we had heard earlier, The Joy of Pepsi.
Yeah. But I think that really looks like an actual movie production.
This is how adverts should be. Like, they're really entertaining. There, it's so rare that you would actually want to seek out and watch an advert. All right, David, well look, let's end part one of our Britney journey here, shall we?
Thanks guys for joining us for the first part. As we said before, there's more to come. We still got the singles Overprotected, Not a Girl, Not Yet a Woman, Boys, and you know, various bits and pieces going on in Britney's world in 2002. So we're literally gonna end of 2001 here, and then we'll pick up next year in the next episode, right?
All right, have a good Christmas and New Year then, darling.
I'm gonna put on World Idol.
Guys, thank you so much for listening. If you are loving what we're doing, hit that subscribe button, follow us at Right Back Pod on all social platforms, email our hearts rightbackpod@gmail.com. Follow me at Dr_JoelB, and you can follow him at
Lovely Me.
Until next time, we'll be missing you before the goodbye. Bye.
Bye.